Yeah, all right, yeah, baby. Welcome to our pre-show here. This is today's Thursday, right? Yeah, got a table read on Thursday. Among the things that we're planning on Thursday, this being a Thursday, one of the things is a table read for F is for Family. And also, I have been hired for another animated feature next week. I'm going to be recording that. I can't tell you what. Even if I knew right off the top of my head, I wouldn't really be fair to people involved. A lot of that's going on now. I have to tell you, it's like become policy with all of the employers, producers, etc. You're not allowed to tweet about the project until it gets on the air. And I understand. I mean, the instinct is to say, look at the cool thing I'm doing, and show all the cameras and all the fucking actors and all the shit, you know. And look at, that's what you want to do. But a lot of that stuff was, when Twitter first came out, a lot of that was going on. Oh, look at this. Take this off the beach, Bill, because it's blocking the beautiful view of the ocean. Anyway, they said, well, look, you know, we don't want you to do that. Because, you know, cats are giving away shit about projects, and, you know, people are suddenly, oh, we know what they're going to do, and they, you know, it's all kinds of stuff. Kind of very, very, like any corporate, like any business, I imagine every business tries to keep its moves secret to the competition until you're ready to pop it. And Twitter is a great, don't get me wrong, it's a great medium. But it's the enemy of secrecy. If you want to keep something secret, keep it as far away from fucking Twitter as you can get it. Some people aren't even on Twitter. Can you get a little... Some people aren't even on Twitter. So, in fact, that's... Hold on, please. It's such an inspired tweet. So that's that. It is a Thursday, as I mentioned. It's hotter than fuck, as you would well imagine it is. Went and had sushi today as well. God, was that good. I don't know, man. I first had sushi in the 80s, and I was turned onto it, like most of the things in my life that are, you know, kind of eye-opening, by a girlfriend. Not that my male friends are not adventurous guys. I mean, they've turned me onto stuff, too, like golf, you know, and poker and you know, cool shit. But the real wow, you know, eating raw fish thing, that's the purview of a woman, you know, at least in my life. And that was in 1980, in the 80s. I was going out with Denise Westwood. Some of you may remember. And Denise went on to, and was at that time, she was working for KMET. I met her at KMET. And she had been at K-Rock, one of the founding disc jockeys at K-Rock under Rick Carroll, which is, that alone would make your career. And Denise was offered the morning show at KMET, and so she was very briefly there with Paraquat Kelly and Dean Goss. And then she went on to KLOS, and really was at KLOS for decades, stayed at KLOS for really a long time, and I believe might still be, I don't know. But Denise is the one who turned me on to sushi. She said, let's go have some sushi. I said, what is that? You know, she said, it's raw fish, but it's really good. Let's go. You sit at a sushi bar and you tell the guy, trust me, you'll love it. And I liked it enough to do it again and again and again and again. And then and then when I was in Miami, briefly, there were a couple of good sushi bars there on South Beach. But I got back to California. Maria and I moved to a place where there was a sushi bar on a lake. And we used to hang there it was fun. But we went to this place every Saturday night after the kids, who were very small at the time, my stepkids, her kids, after they were in bed and tucked in. And they were old enough to be left by themselves, especially when we're only about, you know, a quarter of a mile away at a sushi bar. Then we go there every Saturday night. That was fun. That was like our Saturday night thing. Sushi, a couple of bottles of sake, you know. hanging out with the kids, you know, hanging out with the homeboys over there and all the cats. The sushi chefs back then were just, you know, kind of, they weren't millennials, but they were that year's, you know, that version of a millennial. Maybe they were Gen Xers or maybe the, yeah. Gen, well, and it was like, what was it, 1998, 99? So they would have been, yeah. They're millennials, very early teenage, late teen millennials. And that was great. And now, and then I hadn't had sushi for a while, and I found this place over in Newberry Park. Here's another great restaurant for you. If you're ever in Newberry Park, is it Newberry Park? Yeah. Newberry Park is a town, geez, what is it? Is it one town over? Is it two towns in? Christ, I don't remember. Oh, yeah. It's one town to the north of Westlake Village. And it's a place called Sumo Sushi. Holy Christ, do these guys know what they're doing. This is the best. I'm telling you. And it's packed every lunch. I mean, forget it. When Maria was recovering from her hip replacement surgery, and before that she had the walker, she said, let me take the walker in. We can stand very, you know, conspicuously, and they'll feel sorry for me. I said, that's a great idea. So she went in, and she's got the walker, and we're waiting for the people to go, oh, let's get you seated. Nope, not a chance. I'm not saying that. I'm fooling around. But they were not heartless people. They were good people. But they were just slammed. But we always found a place to sit, and today I went over there again today with her. It was great. Look at me. I'm thinking about my lunch instead of working. Let's see. Another time we went to sushi. What an exciting life, Phil. The times I went to sushi. Look at that blue suit that Ben Mankiewicz is wearing. God damn, that's good looking. That's a royal blue suit. Love it. Love it. I want to get one like that. I want to get one just like that, man. I want that suit. I want it. I'll wear that. That looks great. That's great. With a white dress shirt. Yeah. Okay. The crash from this sugar high will be unpleasant. Jeff Flake, author of Conscience of a Conservative. I saw an article written today by Lucian Truscott. Lucian Truscott the Fourth. And it was very funny. It truly was a very funny article about generals and how we shouldn't get too excited just because a general's in the White House. Because he said, you got to remember that a general got to be a general because he stood there and saluted some real loons through a 30 or 40 year career. You know, you get to be a general not only because perhaps you are an organized guy and you know how to get things done, but you also get to be a general because you're just able to just sit there and put up with nuts, crazy ass motherfuckers at the top of the chain of command who tell you to do nutty fucking crazy stuff sometimes. And he included that McMaster, what's the guy, McMasters and Mattis and Kelly. He said, don't feel so confident that we got generals up there, man. It ain't all that great. You know, it's not the great thing that you, look at this, Lon Chaney's grandson. He said, but it's not the great thing that you'd think it is. So, Lucian Truscott, this guy is the grandson, and Lucian Truscott the Fourth is a civilian. I don't believe he was ever in the military. He's had a 50-year career as a journalist, a writer, and a good writer. And I'm telling you, a very funny writer. Well, his grandfather was Lucian Truscott Jr. And Lucian Truscott Jr. was valued by, among other generals, General George Patton, because he was one of the main fighting forces there when they invaded Sicily and eventually Italy. And he had what was called the Truscott Trot, where he had his men running 5 miles in an hour. The standard army, this is from the article, but the standard distance covered by an army group or a company of army guys, you know, would be like 2.5 miles an hour. These cats did 5. And Patton liked him so much that he used him for special assaults, and et cetera, through Sicily, through Italy. Lucian Truscott Jr., now, in the movie, Patton, is a scene where he says, I'm here to see General Patton. He said, Lucian, my fighter. You know, that's Lucian Trescott, played by, I think, John, goddamn, I can't remember his name, but they have a kind of a confrontational meeting because Patton, as played by George C. Scott, wants him to do something that he knows is going to get a lot of his men killed. And the point being, you know, Patton just threw bodies against the enemy, and some generals were very sensitive to that and didn't want to kill. You know, it's just the standard kind of tension. But that is Lucian. And now I'm reading this article by his grandson, who is himself 70. And it's hysterical. I'm telling you, I can't. I'd read it to you, but I got other shit I got to do. Yeah, sure, Phil. No, but I do. That sounded like Bela Lugosi. No, but I do. Really good. Look for it. Lucian Trescott, the fourth. And the article is on, I don't even know what the name of it is, but it's basically, don't feel too excited that suddenly there's generals up at the top, because generals are used to saying yes to maniacs and loons. And he uses an example, General McMasters, I believe it was McMasters, who wrote a book after he left the Army, about the dysfunction in the U.S., the dysfunction of U.S. policy in Vietnam, and said that basically these goddamn, the very top of the pile, civilian, the president, all these guys, they fucked the whole thing up. You know, we could have done this, we could have done that. They didn't do it. They were nuts. And the point is made by the author, Trescott. I said, well, did you say, you know, you'll notice he didn't say anything at the time. He just stood there and saluted and went off and did the shit they told him to do. So, and I read that. I said, God damn, he's right. Generals are not necessarily engineered to tell, you know, basically say, here's what's going to happen. A lot of them, most of them, all of them really are also used to taking orders. And in some cases, in the article was making the case, in some cases the orders are goddamn nuts. And they carry them out anyway. Now, he wasn't saying they were illegal. There was nothing, but they were. It was just crazy fucking policy and strategy. Of course, that's a matter of opinion. I understand that. Oh, man. All right. So what I'm going to do, you might not think I know what I'm doing today, but I actually do. Wait a minute. Where's my... There it is. So I thought it was...
I thought it was very interesting.
Tyrone Powers was in I Was a Criminal? What's the name of the movie?
What?
I was listening to today's show, and I don't know who it was. I think it was Don Mixa, who I called Dean Wheeler at the end of the bit. And I think General Shaw said, and as you know, thus and so.
What?
You know, just like a fucking teenager. I always thought that was pretty funny. You know, I thought that was pretty funny. Oh, here it is. Let's see who this guy was. There he is. Francois Tone. Gentlemen Are Born. The Romance and Sincerity of Bad Girl. Oh, and The Power. The Pathos of Life Begins. And The Power of I Am a Fugitive. Okay. Well, isn't that interesting? I Am a Fugitive. First National Smashing Picture, right? The Loves and Struggles of Today's Youth. This is made in like 37. The Loves and Struggles. Gentlemen Are Born.
Dun, 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 dun.
Of Today's Youth.
I was born, I came to this country and I worked for everything that I had. I worked. And now, this guy Trump wants to tell me that he doesn't want me because I did not speak English when I first came to America. But I worked and I slaved and I sweated. And I was listening to Chris. I wore a lot of tight leather pants.
And how did you...
Well, you know, it's no secret. The first work that I had was as a sexual animal, you know, as a... and I will say it, as a male prostitute. Chris Norton is saying, but the first work that I had was as a male prostitute.
You mean?
No. I was not, no, not with guys, with women. I was what you would call it.
You were a gigolo.
I was a gigolo, yes.
You were a gigolo, so in other words, this is how you made your living.
Yes, I was paid by women. Now, the President of the United States...
And you think that's a legitimate career?
No, ma'am, I do not, but I'm saying... But the President of the United States would keep me... and keep me away from the women of America, because at the time is when I did la ha la 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 la, and the women would be sick. They would just... Oh.
Rudy Canosa was a male, you know, just how great America is. I would never admit it. What did you do? I was a male prostitute. William Hanna. Well, they're interviewing William Hanna of Hanna and Barbera. How about that, huh? Hey, Bill. God damn it. William Hanna, huh? Oh, they're talking about that goddamn skipping mouse that danced with Gene Kelly. I knew Bill Unger who drew that skipping mouse. And you can say what you want, but I know what he went through. And it was 3 nights and 3 days kept up by this liquid he was drinking that was being fed to him by medical people that his wife knew. That was some kind of a mind, it was mind expanding or something, but he was seeing things, bats, rats, snakes.
What are you saying?
Oh man, you're pretty slow, aren't you? What's the name of this goddamn movie where Gene Kelly danced with Tom and Jerry, or not? Who's the mouse is Jerry, he danced with Jerry. Oh, Anchors Away? I remember when Fred Astaire was still alive. He was going out with a jockey, this female jockey. I have to specify, because a lot of people...
You mean he was...
And he was interviewed, and he made the comment, something on the lines of, well, nowadays you have to be careful, because the guy next to you may be stoned up to his ears. You know, because and he was in a limousine. He did not drive himself, you know, toward the end of his life. He drove because he was obviously an elderly man, and also he was very well known, and also he was rich. So drove limousines everywhere. But he was saying, you know, I'm in the car, and you got to watch out because they're stoned up to their ears. I remember thinking that was a very interesting use of... It was an interesting view of intoxication and, you know, drug intoxication. Coming from it, it was a very generational view, stoned up to their ears. Didn't make any sense, to be honest with you. Didn't make any sense to me, stoned up to their ears. Because maybe I was thinking of drugs as coming from top down, you know. You mean that would make only half of his fucking head is stoned. Things like this used to trouble me. But not no more. Ah, shit. Guess what? God damn it. That really, really hacks me up. I guess I don't need it, but... Why is that not holding? I'm going to start out with Bill Unger. General Shaw. And then I'm going to go to the male prostitute, Rudy Canosa. Chris Norton and Rudy Canosa sound an awful lot alike. Probably something I should do tomorrow night. try this out, man.
The ultimate... fuck.
Wow. John McCain's... They did a favorability rating on John McCain. And he scored higher with Democrats than with Republicans. Republicans 39%, Democrats 74%.
Well, naturally, Phil, because he defeated the president's health care plan.
I would think that Republicans were wise enough and smart enough to see that the goddamn plan wasn't a plan at all. That there was nothing in the piece of shit.
Feeling bad.
Okay, we got three. God damn it.
All right.
God damn it. I think it's this different. Okay. Try it. Vernon Dozier. Josh Turner. Use that. Testing 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Beep, 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 beep. Put on a happy face. Spread sunshine all over the place. Just put on a happy face. Why did da-da-da-da-da put on a happy face? Isn't that from Bye Bye Birdie? It's got to be. There's more songs from that goddamn musical have stuck in my head over the years than any other musical. And maybe it was because I saw it at a time in my life when things were really great. You know, my family was together. I was only about 10 years old at the time. My dad had a sailboat. We were down in Newport Beach. We were eating ice cream. We were going to movies. We were, you know, and things were, and that was a big night. I remember our entire family went out to see this goddamn movie, Bye Bye Birdie. You know, kids are like that. Kids remember things like that. These are huge events for kids, and probably for the adults too, or maybe they don't notice. I don't know, but that musical, Bye Bye Birdie. We saw it down at the Lido Theater in Newport Beach, with you know, Dick Van Dyke and Anne Margaret, and Paul Lynde was a riot, and you know, and Bobby Rydell, and the dude that played Conrad Birdie, and the whole trip was it was based on Elvis Presley, you know, this teenage girl, and blah blah blah. I'm going to go through the whole goddamn thing. Hey, look, there's my acting teacher, Daryl Hickman, in a movie. What's the name of this movie? It was an acting teacher I had in the '80s. Alias Nick Beale. What? Because Daryl did a lot of movies as a teenager. And he told us in class, and then I'll do the thing. This is back in the 80s when I took an acting class from Daryl Hickman. He said, his brother was Dwayne Hickman, who had a hit TV show. He said,
guys, he used to talk like this. Guys, and I remember, let me tell you about how hard you have to work. Guys, hey, in the back, can we get your attention for a minute? My mother used to walk us onto the lot at MGM with her hands, you know, and we were reaching up. And I remember walking by a stage in the morning. I saw Fred Astaire dancing and working, cup of coffee, sitting on a piano. And when my mother walked us off that lot in the evening, 5 o'clock, and I looked, there's Fred Astaire still there, still working. See? So this is how hard you got to work, guys.
Now, what he didn't say is Fred Astaire took 8-hour lunches. But anyway, all right. Enough of this folderol. Let's get our shit together, Jack, before, you know, the whole goddamn thing just goes to pay TV, huh? Ready?
Hey, listen up.
I'm Dog the Bounty Hunter.
And I'm his wife, Beth, of course.
And we're looking for trouble. My wife, Beth, and I have a brand new podcast called Dog and Beth Looking for Trouble.
Which, by the way, you are always
Wait a minute. I fucked that up. Wait, sorry. I fucked the goddamn thing up. Hold on. Shit.
Hey, listen up.
I'm Dog the Bounty Hunter.
I'm not trying to be smart. Why not take your her to the Chinese itch or the Chinese ocean works?
Well, let's see.
Into a comedy act.
Get cornered.
That's what happened. They didn't have a reasonable explanation for having a venereal disease.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's what it sounded like to me.
Well, I mean, they had the itch. The Chinese itch is a venereal disease. And I was trying to...
the Chinese itch. Jesus Christ, that was a fucking waste of goddamn time. Bill Hunter. Chris Norton. I'm fucking around here, I know, but it's going to be late tonight doing this show. I think he's at the Rusty Pelican. Then we have Coach Gozier. Coach Dozier. I think he's in the gym again. Coach, are you in the goddamn gym again? Yes, I am. What's it to you? Wow, this is really heavy, man. This is heavy, man. It's heavy, Jack. It's heavy. I can't find the fucking gym. The wind I got. All right. I got this, or at least I thought I did. Here we go.